This church just about killed me a few years ago. We started 8-ish years ago, and I was 23 at the time. Who knows anything at 23? Not me. A few of you were there. You're nodding your heads, right? And in spite of that, God was up to something, and the growth was explosive right off the bat, and from day one, we were running to catch up. And the first year was really hard, but so much fun. And the second year was really hard, but good. And the third year was really hard. Period. By the fourth year, I was dying. I was 27 years old, and true story, on the verge of a nervous breakdown. I was working insane hours, 6 days a week, 11, 12, 1 in the morning, stressed out of my mind, crazy, fast-paced life, short and rude to my wife all the time, no soul, my passion for God was withering away, my body was worn down, immune system, getting sick all the time. I mean, I was a wreck. I was burning out. And part of the problem was because I love my job. Because I'm in a vocation. I'm in a calling from God to work that fits you, glorifies God, helps others, all that. And I pinch myself. I love you. I love the script. I mean, I love my job, right? Drinking coffee and reading the Bible. It's fabulous, right? Plus, you add on top of that, I'm a workaholic by nature, which to clarify is not healthy. Plus, the church is a black hole of needs. I mean, pastoring is a to-do list that lasts into eternity, right? Because my job is never done, ever. It's a lifestyle job. It never goes away. You put all of that together, and I, at 27 years old, was just about done and to go get a job doing something else. And Jesus, as always, saved me from the jaws of the monster. And the elders were amazing, made me take a month off and cut back my hours a bit and get counseling, and all that was incredible. And to be honest, it's taken me years to recover. Like, when I'm honest with myself, I don't think I'm all the way back yet. I'm really close, but I'm not quite myself yet. Because it takes a long time to get back. And through the meltdown and kind of the years of healing, I had to learn a theology, not only of work, I mean, I get that, but I had to learn a theology of rest. Because the Bible actually talks about both. Work and rest live in a symbiotic relationship, and you cannot talk about one without the other. Because, for example, in order to work well, you need to learn how to what? Rest well. I mean, that's how it goes. And vice versa. And in my healing, I discovered on the early pages of the Bible, a lost art, the ancient Edenic healing art of the Sabbath. Genesis 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God, for 6 days, works. God creates the sun and moon and stars and oceans and mountains and forests and rivers and birds and fish and animals. And as the magnum opus, God creates human to rule over the world. Not bad for a 6-day work week. You thought your week was productive, right? And then, look down at 31. God saw all that he had made, and it was very, what? Good. And there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. God sits back and looks at the creation, the work of God's hands, and says, yes, not bad, very good. Chapter 2, thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. God rested. I repeat, God rested. Now, that does not mean God was tired, per se. The word rested is shavat in Hebrew. Can you say shavat? Right, and it's where we get the word Sabbath, And it literally means to cease or to stop. Or it can be translated to be complete or to celebrate. God, after 6 days of universe-making work, Shavuot. God ceases, God stops, God celebrates the very good world. And in doing so, God built a rhythm into the fabric of creation. For 6 days, men and women and animals, and for 6 days, the creation works and labors and sweats and bleeds and fights to make something of the world. But then on the seventh day, you shavat, you cease, you stop, you celebrate life in God's world. Notice two things about the seventh day or the Sabbath. First off, the text says God blessed the seventh day. Now, in Genesis 1 and 2, there are three blessings. God blesses animals, humans, and Sabbath in that order. And in the first two, animals and humans, the blessing is a life-giving power to procreate. God blessed the animals and said, be fruitful and multiply. Then a few verses later, God blessed Adam and Eve and said, be married couples. You should all know that one, right? Be fruitful and multiply. Then God blessed the Sabbath. What does that mean? That means there is a life-giving power about the seventh day. Work depletes your energy. Would you agree? No matter how much you love your job or are in a vocation or are passionate about what you do, it doesn't matter. After 4, 5, 6 days, you get tired. The seventh day refills your tank, refills you with life, with energy, with strength and muscle and backbone, with vision, with creativity, with ideas about the future. The seventh day, it's life-giving. Why? Because it's blessed. Secondly, notice God blessed the seventh day and made it what? Holy. Jewish rabbis talk about a hermeneutic theory called the principle of first mention, which means, put simply, the first time you read a word in the Bible, it defines the word. Did you know the first time you read the word holy in the Bible is right here? And what does God make holy? Yeah, time. Now that was staggering in the ancient Near East. Because in the world of Genesis 1 and 2, the gods were localized not in time, but in space, in geography. I mean, the gods were found in holy temples or in mountains or forests or rivers or trees or things, right? In space, in the world of space. And you would think after 6 days of making space, of making trees and rocks and rivers and energy and beauty, and it's all very good, you would think God would set up a holy temple or a holy mountain, but no. Instead, God made a holy day. Because God is spirit, and the world, the physicality is good, but God is spirit. And God is found not only in space, but in time. In fact, the author drives the point home three times. And remember in Hebrew, if you want to emphasize a point, you what? You repeat it. And that's precious real estate when you write with papyrus, right? Every word matters. And the first 6 days get one mention. Day one, evening, morning. Day six, when God made humans and animals, one mention. Evening, morning, sixth day, it was very good. Day seven gets three. Look back at two. By the seventh day, God had finished the work. So on the seventh day, he rested. Then God blessed the seventh day. The author is driving the point home. There is a day that is blessed and that is holy. The Sabbath is a day to be and not to do. The Sabbath is a day to remember you were made for pleasure, not just production. Your self-worth does not come from what you do or do not accomplish. The Sabbath is a day when I accomplish nothing and I don't feel guilty. A Sabbath is a day when my phone is off, my email is closed, and unless if you are related to me by blood and dying, you cannot get a hold of me. The Sabbath is a day when I'm fully open and available to my family and my friends. A Sabbath is a day to remember I was made for a garden, and human history is moving forward towards a garden-like city. And the weekly day of rest is a signpost pointing forward to the future of the world. The Sabbath is a day to remember I live in a story and I am not the main character. The world goes on without me. What a novel concept. I take a day off and God does just fine. I am not as important as I think. The Sabbath is a day not to work, but to rest, not to buy and sell, but to have enough, to thank God for what you have, to enjoy the fruits of your labors, food and drink and your home and your free life, to enjoy what you already have in gratitude to the Creator God, from whom come all good things. The Sabbath is not a day to be sad. The Jews say it is a sin to be sad on the Sabbath day. Why? Because it is a day to celebrate, to throw a party in God's world, to sit back at the very good world, to eat and drink and go on a walk and make love to your spouse and thank God and worship and read. To celebrate, it's a celebration of the world God made. And the Sabbath stands as an invitation from the Creator God to the humans made in God's image to take one day out of seven and Shavuot, cease, celebrate. And when we don't take God's invitation, when we fight the natural rhythm built into your human DNA by the Creator God, we reap the consequences. Am I right? Fatigue, exhaustion, stress over medicated lives, worn down empty souls, low immune systems, no creativity, no passion, these starved relationships, these are the results of a life without rest. Which is why, as the story unfolds, God commands the Sabbath. Turn over to Exodus 15 to the right in your Bibles. Exodus 16. Fast forward to the Exodus. You know the story. Israel is out in the desert, and she's hungry and thirsty, and she prays to God, and God says, okay. And every morning, a bread-like substance called, anybody know? Manna, which is Hebrew for what the heck is that, falls from heaven, shows up on the ground. Now, let's pick up the story. Look down at 21. Each morning, everyone gathered as much as they needed. And when the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much, two omers for each person. Oh, that's a bunch. And the leaders of, because you all know what an omer is, all right? And the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. He said to them, this is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Now notice a few things here. Holy Sabbath to the Lord. The word holy can be translated dedicated to. That is what the word literally means. A holy Sabbath is a dedicated to the Lord Sabbath. Well, what does that mean? That means, next slide, yeah, the Sabbath is a day for rest and worship. It's not just, hey, you get tired, take a day off. No, it's more than that. It's a day to the Lord. It's a day set aside for and to the living God. Make sure you get the difference between a day off and a Sabbath, okay? A day off is when you don't work for the man, right? Or you don't go into the office, where you don't go work for your employer, unless you have an iPhone, right? But on a day off, you do all kinds of work, right? Yard work is called yard because it's work, right? You go to the bank, you catch up on bills, the to-do list, you run errands, you buy, you sell, you shop, you work, right? But not for your employer. Now, a Sabbath is different. A Sabbath is where you cease from work and you stop, and it's a day for rest and worship. Which is why Moses goes on, so bake what you want to bake, boil what you want to boil, save whatever's left, keep it until morning. So they saved it until morning, as Moses commanded. It did not stink or get maggots in it. The things we don't worry about anymore. Life before refrigerators in the desert. Eat it today, Moses said, because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you are to gather it. On the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. Moses says, okay, on the sixth day, right before you gather twice as much, you bake what you want to bake, you boil what you want to boil, nothing shows up on the Sabbath. His point is you need to get ready and prepare for the Sabbath. Right, I Sabbath on Fridays. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes, which means for me, Thursday late afternoon is a flurry of activity. I finish up my sermon and my emails and my work for the week, and we clean up the house. I make a run to New Seasons, and we get everything in order so that when I wake up Friday morning, I cease. For a ton of you, Sunday is when you Sabbath, which is fabulous. You get to come to church and take the bread and the cup. Make sure you get ready and prepare. Like, don't stay up until 1 a.m. on Saturday night watching a raunchy movie, filling your mind with smut, and then oversleep. Oh no, I need to get to church. Rush out the door, down 8 cups of coffee in the middle of my sermon. And okay, yeah, Jesus, okay, okay. And then go shopping at Washington Square. Like, no, that's not rest and worship. That's the American dream. Okay, and there's a difference. No, you need to get ready. You need to prepare and get a good night's rest and go and walk and pray and make sure you get into the scriptures before you come to church. Are you kidding? If I'm the only time you open up the Bible, I mean, sure, God's going to speak, but in snippets. You get the Twitter version of the Holy Spirit's voice, right? Right? You need to have a conversation before you show up here in the scriptures, in prayer. The point is, get ready, Moses says. Nevertheless, 27, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commands? I love how Moses gets in trouble for all of Israel's sin. Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day he gives you bread for two. Everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. No one is to go out. So the people rested on the seventh day. Notice how the Sabbath is a command and a gift. Right? It's a gift. The Lord has given you the Sabbath. End quote. It's a gift from the Creator God to the world. And, strange, it's a command. God says, how long will you refuse to keep my command? Why is that? Why does God command the Sabbath? Why does God command you take a day of rest and worship and stop and enjoy and celebrate? I mean, who wouldn't want in on that? I mean, why the command? Turn a few pages to the right. Exodus 20. Israel is out in the desert. Now God is up on the top of Mount Sinai. Moses is at the foot of the mountain, and God speaks the 10 words or the 10 commandments. Number one, you shall have no other gods before me. Number two, you shall not make for yourself an image. Number three, you shall not misuse the name of Yahweh your Elohim or the Lord your God. And number four, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Notice the language, remember. Why does God say that? Why does God command the Sabbath? And why does God say, remember the Sabbath? He doesn't say, remember to not murder or remember to not. Why does he say, remember? Because we forget. Am I right? Because the world sucks you in to its crazy 90 mile per hour pace. Life and email and social media and to-do lists and your job and errands and kids and family. It pulls you into the black hole of insanity called life in the modern world. And we forget, whoa, 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 I am not a machine. I don't run 24/7. I'm a human. I work six, I rest. God says, remember. And God goes on, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. Now, wait a minute. I'm an American. I work 5 days a week, right? Now, don't forget, don't erase the last 3 weeks of theology. Please listen to today's teaching in light of the last three, okay? Is work a good thing or a bad thing? good. You were made by God to work. Work is not a means to an end. You don't work to make money or work to get off work or work to go play or work to get done and go to church. No, you work, to create shalom, to partner with God in taking the world somewhere. And God commands you to work for 6 days a week. It doesn't mean you have to work for your employer for that. But God commands you to make something of the world for six. And then God commands you to rest. 10, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God, set apart for God for worship. On it you shall not do any work. And remember, work is not just what you do to make money. Work is anything God does in Genesis 1 and 2. It's world-making stuff, right? It includes yard work and errands and the bills and all of that is work. God says on the Sabbath, you cease, you stop. No work at all. Neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For, and by the way, that was staggering in the ancient Near East. Okay, the world in Moses' day was built on the back of slaves, and slaves did not get a day off. But God says, no, in my kingdom, under my rule and my reign, everybody, thousands of years before the Justice Conference, God says, rich, poor, slaves, free, everybody gets a day of rest. Why? 11, here's why. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it what? Holy. What is Moses doing? He's retelling the Genesis story. Because the Sabbath is grounded, a theology of rest is grounded in the creation story. God is the creator. Humans like you and me are made in God's image. We work because God works. And we rest because God, what? Rests. Now, here we are, not out in the desert on Mount Sinai, but in Portland in 2012. We live in a very different world. And public opinion has changed about the Sabbath. In Moses' day, the Sabbath was blessed and holy and life-giving and freeing to slaves and the poor and the Sabbath was a gift from God. But in today's world, I think the Sabbath kind of gets a bad rap. Would you agree? People say it's legalistic. It's about rules and regulation. People say it's part of the law, which is shoddy theology, no offense. Was not one of the verses we just read is in the law. Not one. The law of Moses or the Mosaic code Paul talks about starts in the next chapter, Exodus 21. And yes, there are dozens of rules and regulations about the Sabbath in Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, but not one of the passages we just read are out of the law. The Sabbath predates the law by thousands of years. God rested long before Leviticus. I think that may be part of the reason. I think there's more subliminal stuff going on. But one of the reasons is a misreading of Jesus. Turn over to Mark 2 really fast. To the right in your Bibles, fast forward from Moses to Jesus. And in all four Gospels, Jesus gets in trouble all the time. Because Jesus heals on the Sabbath, the audacity. Here's one example, Mark 2, look down at the end, 23. On the Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields. And as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? Now, a bit of backstory here. There's no law against heads of grain on the Sabbath in the scriptures or in the Torah or Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Not one, okay? The Torah just says don't work on the Sabbath, okay? Now here was the problem. In Leviticus, under the Mosaic law, the penalty for breaking the Sabbath was death. Now you have a problem because do not work is a bit ambiguous. Would you agree? What is work? Is cooking work? Is cleaning work? Is like driving? Like what is work? And if the penalty is death, you kind of want to know the definition. Am I right? Now, for obvious reasons, the Pharisees, who started out as people who loved the Bible and were really serious about the scriptures, the Pharisees added all sorts of rules and regulations on top of the Torah to make sure nobody would break the Sabbath. okay? By Jesus' day, there was the written law called the Torah, Genesis through Deuteronomy, inspired by God from the Spirit, and the Pharisees added the oral law called the Mishnah, made up of 1,500 commands. Not one was from God. And there were hundreds of commands specifically about the Sabbath, commands about how far you could walk and not walk. You read about a Sabbath day's journey in the New Testament because there were all sorts of legalistic, strict laws about how far you could walk, how much weight you could or could not carry, what kind of cooking you could or could not do. All sorts of rules and what happened? What happened is the Pharisees lost the plot line. And Jesus comes along and says, 25, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? By the way, that's like a full-blown sarcastic dig, right? The Pharisees are experts in the Bible. Have you never read a well-known story? When his companions were hungry and in need in the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God, ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat, and he gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Get that last line. The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Now, in the first century, in Jesus' world, with hyper-legalistic Pharisees all over the place, people needed to hear the second half of that sentence. The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. You lost the plot line. Wake up. It's life-giving, blessed, holy. But I would argue, in the 21st century, people like you and me need to hear the first half of that sentence. The Sabbath was made for man. Because we have the opposite problem. We don't have hundreds of rules and regulations about how to take the Sabbath. We don't have any at all. I mean, the majority of you, God bless you, and myself for years, don't take one. You take a day off. That's not the same thing. You don't take a Sabbath. You don't set aside a day for rest. And I was like that for decades of my life. For me, it was, whoa, when I first started learning, wow, it's all over the scriptures and God rest. It was all new to me because the majority of Americans don't take one. We work more and more. I read a study last night, said from 1973 to 1990, the average American work week went up from 41 hours to 47, which is almost a whole other work day. And I'm not against that. I'm all for work. But the problem is the amount of time Americans spent on leisure, the study said, went down by 37%. That's insane. And part of that is due in part, as you know, to technology, to labor-saving devices, right? Now, because of iPhones and iPods and laptops and internet and Wi-Fi, now work follows you everywhere, into your house, into your living room, you cannot escape your boss. He haunts you everywhere you go. Next slide. Remember the Crackberry? Remember, I found out this morning it was in 2002, one decade ago, the BlackBerry came out. And prior to that, it was pagers, people, okay? Pagers. Insane leap forward in the evolution of mankind, right? But do you remember when the BlackBerry first came out, it really started a dialogue in the world, because all of a sudden you had people, not just CEOs of mega, corporations, but you had people, normal average people working 24/7. And you had email at the dinner table and texting on date night, and you had technology chasing you everywhere. And you remember there were all sorts of articles and study after study after study, and experts and therapists and doctors and people in the medical community and sociologists and experts in the business community preaching against the 24/7 hour work week, preaching against technology and the dangers. Watch out for the Crackberry because people are addicted. I don't hear talk like that anymore, do you? To clarify, it's still a problem. In fact, it's worse than ever, but we lost the war. In one decade, we have changed the way the world works. I mean, businesses are, I was reading an article the other day in an architecture magazine about how a bunch of the best architecture done in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s was all businesses, like drive out to like the Tektronix building and stuff like that. Now, it's all, nobody puts money into an office anymore. You work all over the place. You work at coffee shops. You work at your house. We're expecting the next 10 or 20 years, the vast majority of Americans will work 25 to 70% of their job from home or wherever they feel like it. Now, that's not all bad per se. But that means we need to have serious conversations about how to live in light of technology. There are sins of technology. I hope you get that. If it's family time and dads, you're ignoring your kids and checking your email on your iPhone, to clarify, that's a sin. If you're on date night and instead of loving your husband or your spouse, you're posting Facebook things, whoa, wake up to the actual real relationships with a real human being who's right in front of you. I mean, see, it blows my mind. I'm in conversations with people. Oh, just a minute. What are you doing? I'm right here. Hello. There are sins of technology. We don't know how to stop. I mean, is it any wonder mental illness in the U.S. is exploding? In the last 20 years, the number of people diagnosed with mental illness has tripled in the United States of America, tripled. We are literally going crazy. And I think one of the reasons is we don't know how to rest. You know, Orthodox Jews to this day count time from sundown to sundown, and the Sabbath for Orthodox Jews starts on Friday night. And there's a box right by the front door, and you walk into your house right before the Sabbath, and you put your phone in the box, turned off. And you put your wallet in the box. And you put your car keys in the box. And you put your iPad in the box. And you put your TV remote in the box. And you put your Wii controllers in the box. The very fact that 98% of you are thinking, what would I do for a whole day? Are you out of your mind? Sounds like torture. Simply makes the point, we need to relearn how to rest. Am I right? I mean, we need to relearn the art, not only of working, but of resting. Why? Because watch what happens. Keep reading. Remember, the chapter breaks are not in Mark's story. Mark goes on, another time Jesus went into the synagogue and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, stand up in front of everybody. Then Jesus asked them, which is lawful on the Sabbath? What's the rule? What's the, to do good or to do evil? Save life or kill? And it's okay to do good. It's okay to, you know, to save life on the Sabbath. But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. He said to the man, stretch out your hand. I need to volunteer really fast. You, stand up. I mean, can you imagine? That's a bad example because whoever said yes to that is not the nervous type. What's your name?
Ariel.
Ariel? Like the mermaid. Yeah, welcome. Fabulous. Well done. I mean, imagine making somebody stand up right in the middle of the synagogue, 200-300 people packed into the synagogue, somebody with a hidden, secret, scary disease nobody knows about, makes you unclean, and Jesus says, stretch out your hand. I'm Jesus, you're Ariel, whatever. Stretch out your hand, and you can sit down. Thank you very much. And he or she, whatever, stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Did you know the vast majority of the healings in the Jesus story take place on the Sabbath? Go read Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and all four Gospels. Count up the healing stories. Count up how many of the healing stories are on the Sabbath day. And it's way, way high percentile, the vast majority. I don't think that's random. I think that's on purpose. I think, next slide, the Sabbath is a day for healing. The Sabbath is when Jesus does some of his best work. What are you saying? I'm saying it's not rocket science. Take a Sabbath, people. Work 6 days. It's not hard to understand, but wow, it breaks from the American rhythm. work 6 days, make something of the world, partner with God, create shalom, six, and then set aside a day for rest and worship. Now, a few questions people ask me all the time. First off, when? When should I? When can I? When can I not? Is it Saturday? Is it Sunday? Is it Friday night? Is it whenever works? Notice in Genesis 2, it does not say what day of the week. It says the seventh day. All the legalists hate that. But it does not say what day of the week. Here's a line from Romans 14. Next slide. One person considers, he's talking about the Sabbath. One person considers one day more sacred than another. Another considers every day alike. Each of them should be fully convinced in their own mind. Whoever regards one day as special does so to the Lord. The point is, figure out a day that works for your schedule. The majority of you, it's going to land on Sundays, which works out perfect, and you come to church and all of that. But for if you're a student and you work on the weekends, or you're in the medical community and your schedule's erratic, or you're on call, or like me, you work all weekend, like figure out, outside of the box, creative ways to get into the rhythm of God. I mean, for me, Sunday is hands down the worst day of the week. To Sabbath. It's not, whoops. No, I love, don't get me wrong, I'm sorry. I love my job. I love Sundays, but I mean, it's exhausting. I'm up at 5, hit the ground running, preach all day, 4 or 5 hour-long exegetical sermons. I don't get home until 11 or 11:30 at night. I'm dead. It takes me about 2 days to get over the weekend. I call Monday morning preacher's hangover, right? It's not literal, to clarify. But I mean, it takes me a few days to get out. And I don't Sabbath. I don't cease and stop. I work. I love to work on Sundays. But for me, because I work on the weekends, I Sabbath on Fridays, and that works perfect for me and my family. Figure out a creative way to enact that in your life, your job, your work, your family, your story. Another question I get asked all the time is what? Like, what can I do? What can I not do? What's allowed? What's not allowed? Can I exercise? Can I not exercise? Can I go out? Can I not? How far can I go out? Can I drive? Can I not? Can I buy stuff? Can I not? Like, calm down, for starters. And God bless your inquisitive nature, but I think you're missing the point, okay? The point is not rules and regulations and what's allowed and what's not allowed. The point is there's a day that is blessed and holy. And God invites you to do whatever is life-giving, whatever celebrates life in God's world, what you have, what you already have, relationships, people, family, friends, beauty, the world. I mean, do whatever is life-giving for you. That works out different for every man, every woman, every human, right? Do whatever is life-giving for you. Now, for you nuts and bolts people, here's a day in the life of JMC, right? And don't copy me by any means, but I Sabbath on Fridays, like I said. That means Thursday, kind of early evening, I'm a ritual person, right? I go through kind of a semi ritual to get ready. I work out of my home a bit. I have a home office, and I finish all my stuff and emails and, you know, grocery store. I go into my home office, and I'm a neat freak. I clean off my computer because I'm weird, and I power down my computer. I turn off my phone. I put it away in my drawer, and I don't take it back out until most of the time first thing Saturday morning. It's off. It's done. I'm a dad right now. Not a pastor of solid rock, right? And I go on a walk, I clear my head, I pray for God's blessing, for God to renew and refresh me from the inside out in the next 24 hours. Thursday night is date night with my wife. I get up Friday morning, I sleep in. I'm not a morning person. God bless you people. I'm jealous, but I'm not one. I sleep in, I make a pot of French press, I go into my quiet study, I read the scriptures, I get caught up on my Bible reading because, you know, the read through the Bible in a year, I'm always behind, right? I get caught up on Fridays, I read 20 chapters, get caught up, read, pray. The majority of the time I read one chapter from the Sabbath by Abraham Joshua Heschel. There's a bookmark. It's not a handout. There's a bookmark in your weekly today from the work series with a list of recommended readings, and he's on there. And that book changed, wow, the seminal work on a theology of Sabbath. And I read it really easy. It takes about 5 minutes. I read one chapter every Friday morning to kind of get my head right, my theology right. Then when I'm ready, I walk out of my study. My boys are waiting there, all happy for this. My boys look forward to the Sabbath all week long. My three-year-old is at that age where there's no understanding of time, you know? Every morning, Daddy, is today the Sabbath? Daddy, is today, like every 7 days a week, right? Is today the Sabbath? No, I'm sorry, it was yesterday. Yesterday's a long time ago when you're three, right? And I come out, my boys are all happy, and we say, happy Sabbath, Daddy. And we get the children's storybook Bible, and we make hot chocolate, and we sit down on the couch, and we read a story or two, and we talk about the scriptures, and we pray, and the boys pray for God's blessing on the day. I do a bit of light exercise because I feel better. I run just a few miles or do a bit of yoga. Don't judge me. Get ready, take a long shower, not a cold one that day, and we go out to brunch most of the time. We love the city. We love to eat in my family. We go to Tasting Sons or Gravy. Last Friday, we went to Slappy Cakes, you know, in Belmont, where you make your own pancakes. My boys had so much fun. Tears is the best day of my week, Daddy, Jude said. And we eat, and we come back home, put the boys down for a nap around 1. My wife loves to take a nap. I love time alone, and I go read. I don't read anything connected to my preaching or church or you. I don't read about church, or none of that. Right now, I'm reading The Meaning of Marriage by Tim Keller, and I pray, and I think over my marriage. I take out my journal. I think about the last week, what's in front of me. I love when the weather's nice. I go on a walk. When the boys wake up, we go on a family walk if it's not raining too hard, down to the park right around the corner, play. We come back home, start a roaring fire, play Legos, sit, talk. Then we eat all night long. My wife and I cook together. We have so much fun, and we eat. Sometimes we watch a family movie. Not always. We play. We hang out. We eat. We eat. We eat all night long. So much fun. And something, it's hands down the best day of my week. And something happened, and I love my job. I look forward to the next day. But I love, all week long is like a journey to Friday for me. Because something happens right around 3 or 4 p.m., like, I get my soul back. I don't know how to put my finger on that, but something inside me, like, shifts, and, like, I get my soul back. What is that? Is that the Sabbath, or is that the Lord of the Sabbath? I would argue the answer is yes. Because the Sabbath is a day to remember what I should remember 7 days a week, and that is my rest is found in God. The question you need to ask yourself, not only on Sundays or Fridays, but is when your soul is tired, where do you go for rest? Where do you run for refreshment, for renewal, for joy when you are down, for energy when you are tired, for vision and creativity when you are in a low? Where do you run for, when your soul is tired, where do you go? TV? Fantasy, escape, addiction, stuff, shopping, the internet, social media. Like, where do you go? The Sabbath is a day to remember the center of the universe is a creator God. I am not him. And he is where I go for rest. May you remember that today and tomorrow and the next. May you never forget the God of rest. Let's pray.